Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon or new Apple Podcast subscribers, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. Thank you to backers including Matt Dawson-Jones, Brian Creevy and Andy Rivett-Karnak, who support us directly. And for the price of just a couple of coffees a month, you can join them, get access to our full ad-free show, listen live, chat with us as we record, get our exclusive sister show Extra Message and a whole bunch more. Find out more at uktechshow.com/subscribe. Ian, I made up a fantastic reason for why you weren't here last week, and I can't remember what it was now.
Did you? I haven't actually listened to that show yet. Time's been a bit short for me this week. Do you want to tell me what it was? Or
no, that's what I'm saying. I can't remember. It's something to do with being arrested for having an illegal emu farm or something.
It
came up naturally.
You can't just have an emu farm.
Well, that's apparently not, Ian, no, and hence your legal issues last week. But nothing that we couldn't get over quite quickly, I'm sure. So thanks for rejoining us this week. Wired was amongst the outlets that covered the news that, thanks to Brexit, roaming charges, hooray, are coming back for British travellers to Europe. Wired wrote that in January 2021, the UK's four major mobile phone networks, that's O2, Vodafone, Three and EE, all promised customers they wouldn't be reintroducing roaming charges in Europe post-Brexit. But as Wired points out, less than 6 months later, some of them are, but in a variety of different ways, which we wanted to cover. EE is the first to announce a change, and it's going to be introducing a flat fee of £2 a day for customers travelling in 47 different European countries. Ireland, however, is exempt, and the roaming fee is only going to be for new and upgrading customers if they sign up for a new contract after July the 7th this year. So there is a little bit of wiggle room if you're thinking about subscribing and you're planning on traveling, then if you wanted to join EE, then do that before July 7th, but maybe ask in case something changes. Otherwise, the fee will be levied from, I think, January 2022. But if you do pay that £2, or you can pay an extra £10 a month for the whole month, and then you can access the plan's full data minutes and text allowance as you can now. O2, Three and Vodafone are doing something slightly differently. They don't seem to be introducing additional fees at the moment, but they are addressing the fair usage cap. So O2 said that it's not reintroducing the roaming cost, but it is instigating a new fair use cap of 25 gigabytes for data across Europe, which I think seems perfectly reasonable for the time being, and that's going to be effective from August. Three is reducing its fair use limit from 20 gig down to 12, and that's from July. And Vodafone said, it didn't say in the Wired article, actually, it said this to the BBC, that it isn't introducing roaming charges, but it has got a fair use cap still of 25 gig, which is the same as O2. I'm going to include a link to Wired's story in the show notes because it's got a lot of detail on some of the smaller networks like Virgin Mobile, Tesco, Sky, and so forth. And I did go back to EE's press release from 2017 to see if I could figure out if there was like a wording change. There was part of me that wondered, did they pull the press release? You know, because they want journalists like me and you going back through and looking at the hypocrisy. They haven't deleted it. It is still live from 2017 when it was announced. And to be fair to EE, there was no mention in here that data costs for roaming would be reintroduced. There's a lot of promo about how, oh, isn't it great? It's going to be no extra cost and blah blah blah. And a lot of this came after the law changed in Europe to say you can't charge for roaming anyway. And we joked around that topic for a little while on the podcast because all the networks came out and said, hey, we're offering free roaming, and we were like, Yeah, you kind of have to, but they all put their own slant on why they were offering slightly more than they were told they had to. And there's a quote here from Mark Allera, CEO of EE, said, blah, 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 blah. Our customers want to be able to stay connected, whether they're traveling around the UK or abroad. We provide our customers blah, 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 more than any UK operators, blah, 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 blah. But that was back in 2017. But he didn't say, hey, we're killing it, and isn't it great that this is all behind us? It was actually kept, whether deliberately or not, quite vague. So unfortunately, I couldn't poke any fun at that. They've not gone back on their word as far as the original announcement goes. But obviously, there's been a lot of talk and news articles in the years since then that that does smack of a little bit of hypocrisy here. And I find it weird because £2 a day, £10 a month, To me, it doesn't feel like that's enough money to warrant reintroducing this.
Yeah.
Like, just but, suck it like, up.
That's kind of the point, really, isn't it? It's just to make a bit of extra money. There's clearly not any problem with getting the data back for free. It's just a greed thing. We have to remember that corporations are not our friends, ladies and gentlemen. It's just capitalism.
I have no problem with companies making money. Obviously.
Well, no, I don't either, but I do have a problem with them pointlessly introducing charges that, you know, make life worse for everyone. Like, they're already making money.
Let's throw a bone here, because the reason for this, obviously there's Brexit. We're no longer part of that group in the same way that we were, and therefore no longer have to abide by the regulations that the European government
well,
put in place.
Just a quick
but
pause on
companies
that.
Companies can now start charging companies for the usage of their networks that a non-European nation's citizens use. So
that might be true, but EE
is just saying, well, we're being charged, so we're passing it along to you. My argument is they probably could have saved a bit of a headache and just said, we'll introduce these usage caps, or we're not going to charge our customers for this and just be done with it. But they haven't.
But was this ever taken out of the law? Because obviously when we signed, when we were in the EU, these became law, right? So it was part of the EU's laws. So it was therefore part of the UK law because it was added to the statute books. Has it been removed? I don't know if anyone knows the answer to that, because my understanding is you'd have to actually change the law to make it possible. But, you know, I still fundamentally don't agree. I don't necessarily think that there is any extra cost to them. I don't see why there would be. It would be very simple negotiation. Let's just carry on doing what we do already. We'll let people travel around and, you know, enjoy the benefit of, you know, the European bloc. As even if we're outside it, we're still Europeans. We're still on that continent. It makes sense to have a pan-European plan like this, even if, you know, we're not part of the economic union that contains most of it. So, I'm firstly unsure about what happened with that law. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. You'd need to ask one. But I'm confused by that, and I'm baffled by the fact that this has happened at all. Like you, it would have been an easy one for them to swallow, and to not, you know, pass on to customers and, you know, keep some savings, because it smacks of opportunism, really, to me.
Well, Nick in our live chat has helpfully pointed out from Ofcom, it says, since the 31st of December 2020, the EU rules on roaming charges no longer apply in the UK. This means that, like other destinations, the amount your mobile provider can charge you for using your mobile phones in EU countries, Norway, Iceland or Liechtenstein, is no longer capped. And that's from Ofcom. Thank you, Nick, for pointing that out. So yes, the law doesn't apply there, but that doesn't solve the argument that even if for PR reasons alone, this maybe should have been avoided. But I also think that this isn't a one-way street, so to speak. There are still, say, Germans who will want to come to Britain, and that raises the question of roaming there too. So I looked that up specifically. I picked Germany because I couldn't go through all the member states of the EU. But I was interested in just seeing in general what it looks like European countries are doing as far as roaming in the UK is concerned. And for instance, Deutsche Telekom and Vodafone Germany both explicitly say roaming in the UK is still included as part of its packages in accordance with that European regulation. So it doesn't necessarily look like the UK is yet being made an example of, if you like, by European or continental operators. So, you know, I don't know. I'm sure EE has done its mathematics and figured this out, but it seems, I don't know. I'm a bit surprised, to be honest, both for the amount they'll make and the potential PR hit, and the fact that it gives a very good reason to say, well, you know what, I'm at the end of my contract. Vodafone says it's got a 25 gig usage cap, which at the time of recording it seems perfectly fair, as has O2, and Three's, while reduced, is still 12 gig, which is probably fine for most holiday makers.
It probably is, realistically.
You know, it's,
but
it's,
it will, I think we will continue to see a drop in the amount you're allowed to use, and it will get more and more expensive. You know, no company's going to do this overnight, are they? They're going to be careful about it because they know there'll be a backlash. Therefore, it'll be a slow drip, and it'll just get more and more expensive with time. But this is the thing, right? So, you know, there are other countries. For example, there are other countries that are not in the EU that are included in this. It would have been perfectly possible for us to stay in that kind of deal. It doesn't require that you're necessarily in the EU. The two are not related.
No, and it's suggested in chat that you could get a German SIM. Charlotte says German contracts, when she was there, were much more expensive than UK ones, and that so probably isn't a way around it. And but has included a link as well to a techuk.org website that explains a bit more about the Roam like at home ended on the 1st of January this year. So I'll include the link to that in the show notes as well, of course, as links to all the stories and press releases and everything else we've talked about. Get that at uktechshow.com. If you have a view on this, of course, you can let us know. Send us an email, uktechshow@icloud.com. ISP Review. Good website, Ian.
Yeah, very.
Wrote that BT and satellite operator OneWeb, which is partly owned by our government here, have reached an agreement that will see the two working together to bring ultra-fast, low-latency broadband speeds to some of the hardest-to-reach rural parts of the UK, where even their £5 billion Project Gigabit programme would struggle to go. Now, on my professional home turf, Bloomberg also reported this and said the companies have signed a memorandum of understanding to accelerate digital communications for businesses and communities using OneWeb's connectivity services. And these are the ones that are from low Earth orbit. And Bloomberg also pointed to a statement from the company OneWeb, that is, on Sunday. Now, this comes after Prime Minister Boris Johnson pledged extra subsidies to bring faster connection speeds to the whole of Britain, with a particular nod, I think, to rural areas as it emerges from coronavirus crisis. And successive pandemic lockdowns have, as we've discussed in the past many times, have really underlined the importance of faster broadband to the emerging digital economy, specifically those areas outside of bigger towns and cities. Now, bit of a reminder about OneWeb, because I know you're interested in this in particular, Ian.
And, very.
In fact, it was Ian that suggested we include this story. I wasn't originally going to. But OneWeb, it's based in London. It's a rival to Elon Musk's Starlink satellite network. It's launched just over 100 of a planned 648 or so satellites. They're about the size of a sort of refrigerator. The company said recently that it was going to start connecting UK customers and other sort of northern regions by the end of this year. I pulled up a statement from OneWeb's website and one digital infrastructure minister, and in fact, one time friend of Ian and I, ex-journalist Matt Warman, in fact, was quoted in their press release as saying, "No one should miss out on the benefits of better broadband and mobile coverage. It's great BT and OneWeb are working together to explore new ways to bring faster and more reliable connectivity to the hardest to reach homes. Alongside industry, we have kicked off the biggest broadband build in British history and are spending a record £5.5 billion to end poor or patchy 4G coverage and deliver gigabit speeds in all corners of the UK." Interesting instance of me agreeing with what an MP says, possibly because he used to be a technology journalist and does tend to know what he's talking about. So give us your views on this, Ian. As it was you that wanted to talk about this, it seems like a smart move to for BT to get into bed with OneWeb to do something like this, but I'm sure you'll have a tremendous criticism lined up, ready to go.
No, absolutely not. No, I'm obviously unsure about how OneWeb will actually pan out as a data provider, because it wasn't designed for that originally, was it? Or was it? No, it was, wasn't it?
It was. They wanted to use it for as a replacement for Galileo.
Idiots. Anyway, this is the thing. We bought half the thing. Is it half? We might as well use it, mightn't we?
It was about half. It was with the Indian Bharti.
It was half a billion quid, wasn't it? I do think this is a great idea. I've seen what's capable with Starlink. I've witnessed the fact that lower latencies than I ever imagined were possible would be achievable with a satellite in that kind of low Earth orbit. So it makes absolute sense for us to use the British version, or even, to be honest, to just use Starlink if necessary. I don't care which one provides the service. I just think the fundamental idea is that, you know, why not make use of this extra satellite-based capacity when it's going to be financially impractical? Not impossible, I want to be very clear. There is nothing impossible about running cables to places. It's just that no one wants to pay to do it. And adding satellites in, you know, fills that gap. It's not going to cost BT a huge amount. I imagine they'll be charged for whatever they use, or, you know, for doing the deal. So it makes perfect sense for them to then leverage that and perhaps put a small receiving station in a village and then use the existing cabling to connect people up to that, so that they don't have to run miles of fiber optic, or I guess a domestic property service of their own, where they come and bolt a dish to your house and then you get access to the full speed. I don't know what exactly it is that, you know, that people are going to get from this that they wouldn't get perhaps if they just subscribed to Starlink themselves. My guess would be that it's it will be cheaper if BT provides it, because you wouldn't be, you know, paying that whole bill yourself, because obviously Starlink is something like £80 a month. It's extremely expensive. And you've got the equipment cost, which is probably unaffordable. So it will give people, hopefully, who live out in the sticks, a much cheaper, more cost-effective way of accessing the internet that doesn't require, you know, lots of cabling be put down for a relatively small number of houses. And why not use the satellites? They've proved that they can do it. So it's good. I'm pleased.
We have, well, great. And we have talked about OneWeb before as it compares to Starlink. And I think at the time we concluded that the expectation we have of price is that it will at least be competitive with existing solutions of similar service, but more expensive than a service that maybe doesn't have as good performance.
Yeah.
Depending on where you are.
From what I can tell, the investment in OneWeb actually is continuing. So they are planning to have complete coverage of it's not the Northern Hemisphere, but there is I think it's 30 degrees north. So they are planning to have a complete coverage of higher than 30 degrees north this year. and they may have global coverage, I think, sometime early next year. So OneWeb is looking like it's going to be a proper global service if there's enough interest and customers. But certainly it'll be good to have the UK covered, and, you know, makes perfect sense, really. So
I mean, they want to have about 2,000 satellites, and those are going to be a second generation model, as far as I'm aware, which will be a medium Earth orbit. Actually, they won't be in low Earth orbit.
Interesting.
Be medium.
Yeah, well,
medium,
that will affect medium. The latency, won't it? I mean, probably not by a huge amount, I guess, because it's not far.
Yeah,
it's not a geostationary orbit, which is a very, very long way.
Well, let's talk about that, because Nick in the live chat asked what the bandwidth is, and we didn't mention it. But I think the promise is that it will be in excess of 100 megabits per second and latency under 40 milliseconds, which means that latency-wise, it's not going to be as good as fixed line. It won't necessarily be as good as 4G if you are using that. So moderate impact on live video calling and gaming, but makes it perfectly possible. And 100 megabits is a decent speed, particularly when you consider there are parts of Britain that are stuck on under 5 megabits per second for fixed line or existing wireless. So it's not terrible. Downstream goes.
The BBC says that in a presentation or a demonstration to the US Department of Defense, they were testing data rates of 500 megabits per second with a delay or latency of 32 milliseconds. So that's pretty good.
So the technology is actually potential to be better. And if it can do 100 down, there's no reason it can't technically also do 100 up, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, and these are...
Depending
these
on
are,
how you cut the pie and divide it out.
Well, exactly. But these are very different satellites to the old-style data satellites that provided, you know, internet access in rural areas. Like, they were good down, but you needed an earthbound connection to get the data back to the internet. Now, obviously, that's changed now. That's not the case. So, so I don't know what the upstream is. I believe it's quite good, though. I think the demonstrations I've seen of Starlink are the ratio is similar to how any ISP would do it. So they don't, you're not getting 500 meg up, but I've seen demos of 30 or 40 meg up.
Yeah, I mean, Starlink does, I've seen it quoted as between 50 meg and 150 meg and between 20 and 40 milliseconds. But I have also seen, there's a PC Mag article. Is it PC Mag? Yeah, median download speeds from Starlink are around 40 megabits per second. But there is an article from January on, funnily enough, ISP Review, again, that's talking about 10 gigabit per second speed using lasers. So, I mean, that's probably a little bit
the Starlink laser thing is launching already. Like, that's so the satellites communicate with each other using lasers. So if, for example, if you were in a boat in the middle of the ocean, then the data would be relayed to the satellite above you and then back by laser to a satellite above land, and then it would downlink it to the base station. So that opens up more accessibility. I'm not necessarily sure if it's quicker, but again, it, you know, keeping stuff in the air will reduce latency whilst that signal's going around. So it would be easier than sending it down a copper cable, for example. It would have lower latency because then just smashing around in space where... the near vacuum means that light can perform well.
How interesting. Okay. I mean, I'm still looking at this ISP review article actually from January, and the company has hinted, I'm quoting the website here, on top of that, the company has hinted of speeds up to 10 gigabits per second maybe possible for individual users in the future. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah,
I don't know how far phenomenal. In the future. I know they've got thousands more satellites they need launching over the next 5 years or so. But
well, that's it. I mean, I guess it depends how many satellites you put in space. I mean, you know, presumably each satellite could have a number of antenna on it, and you know, there's all sorts of things I expect that could improve bandwidth. I think Elon Musk has sort of said that Starlink won't be great in cities. I imagine that's because of a density problem, because obviously, there's that. It's not like there is a beam that comes out of each satellite, and presumably you can only have one beam in, or maybe a couple of beams in one place at a time. So there is a population cap, but I don't know whether or not that's actually true of the final, you know, in 20 years' time, whether or not that service will be able to deliver gigabit speeds to literally everyone on Earth. It'd be fantastic.
I mean, I think, I sort of feel like to complain that it would be unavailable in the cities would be pretty crappy for the people out in the country who, you know, for whom this is primarily targeted.
Well, do bear in mind as well that it, whilst it is true that the countryside is obviously the most disadvantaged in terms of bandwidth, it can be true that you can suffer just as many problems in the city. Like, do you remember Earlsfield, Nate?
How could I forget?
Yeah, I mean, it was 1 megabit per second, you know, so... And that was Wandsworth. It's not far from London. It basically is London. It's a, you know, and the bandwidth there was terrible. You just couldn't get ADSL any quicker than a megabit.
When were we living there though? 2007.
Yes, but it was uncommon for the time. It was quite common at the time to have 8 megabits per second. We were stuck on one.
Yeah, God, how did we live, mate? How did we live?
I don't know.
Well, I do remember because we had a LAN. And if you remember, you had an Xbox and your PC LAN'd directly downstairs when your Xbox 360 wasn't exploding.
Yes, it was exploded a bit.
I had one upstairs connected by LAN and we could play that way. So it's just how we did it back then. Okay. Well, any views, of course, welcome. Insights, uktechshow@icloud.com. Hopefully this will launch in some form by the end of the year and we'll get to try it out and give you a more rounded opinion at that time. Shall we do a little email here?
Yes, before we
wrap up? This comes in from Andy H, not to be confused with Andy Hoyle, my brother, who is on
this
show.
Too many
sometimes.
Andy H's listen to this show.
Well, Andy H is one of our patrons.
I know, and I wouldn't want to lose any of them.
He says, "Hi chaps, was listening with interest about the email ban that you trialled as mentioned on Extra Message. This was going back a few weeks. I'm not sure it would make me more productive." And I should just clarify, this was on an episode of Extra Message a few weeks ago where I said we had this little experiment on my team at work where we essentially banned email for a week to see if we could be more productive by just picking up the phone or something. Anyway, Andy continues, "I'm not sure that would make me more productive. In fact, it would probably damage how much work I get done. The beauty of email is that few people expect an immediate response, very different from an instant message or phone call. I can stack and prioritize the emails that I'm sent and deal with them at certain times of the day. I can take an hour to concentrate on a specific task and then return to my email afterwards to work through. If instead people were calling me or pinging instant messages at me, I'd never get my hour of focus to complete the task. Not sure how typical I am, but I make use of various flags and categories available in Outlook to help me work out what needs to be done today, tomorrow, or what I can safely ignore for now. Keep up the good work, Andy." Thanks very much, Andy. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree.
And how did your trial go?
Really well. Surprisingly well.
That people will be suffering from not having written records of their emails and, you know, or their communications? I mean, I use that quite substantially for reminders, so I would struggle with that.
All I can say is that so far we've only noticed positive things. A slightly greater reliance on using instant messaging, which again is itself logged. You can still go back and search through it. Slightly more phone calls, but ultimately still a lot of email. But it's at least email that it makes you think twice about whether you need to actually send it or reply to all every single time. So it was an interesting experiment. Would advise. And if you want to hear that extra message, because we've done, goodness, how many extra my have we done now? Extra messi. Dozens, but they're all available if you become a patron at patreon.com/UK Tech, or if you just want to get our extended version of the show, has no ads, it's longer. And this week we went in depth talking about the WD MyBook disaster, where people's network attached hard drives had all their contents erased. We talked at depth about that and backup policy. So you can get that on Apple Podcasts now, of course, or by becoming a patron. And thank you to anyone who is doing either of those things. Someone who is, it's Tom Merritt, and he's been covering tech all week. And this is what's been happening this week in the wider world of tech.
really lost
this week on
there,
Daily Tech News Show. It was Accessibility Week. Shelley Brisbane told us how machine learning is helping improve accessibility and when it isn't. David Woodbridge talked to us about how to test products to see if they're really as accessible as they say they are. Andrew and Jen from Bungie talked about the increasing attention paid to accessibility in game design. Andrea Stefik told us about a programming language called Quorum that was designed from the beginning for visual accessibility. And Christoph Zajac Denik explained the accessibility challenges for people like him with dwarfism. All that and Windows 11 too at dailytechnewsshow.com.
That is to say Windows 11 as well.
Well, yes. We didn't even touch on Windows 11, did we? I mean, wow. That's got some real issues, that thing.
It has, but I would recommend, if only listening to one episode, listening to the last one Tom mentioned on Daily Tech News Show, gaming with dwarfism. Frankly, it is not a topic I've ever thought about. Every single word is new to me, so do check that out. That's dailytechnewsshow.com. Thank you, Tom. In fact, I'll be on DTNS on Tuesday, I think.
Fabulous.
I think. Yes. Anyway, thank you, Tom. Thanks, everybody, for listening live and supporting us however you do, and we will see you in 1 week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.